We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
And according to reports, he's turned down a deal worth $30 million a year because he's seeking $40 million a year. Lorenzo Neal, I know how you feel about these contracts. How do you feel about this one specifically?
Crazy. You know, put A in your shoe and beat it. You look at Dak Prescott, there's no way you give him that type of money. But you know what? If he gets it, good for him. The market is crazy. It's a situation where I don't, you know, there's quarterbacks out there, guys, you know, that I don't believe they should be getting paid the money that they're getting. I think it's absolutely ludicrous. We look no further than San Francisco. I mean, I think he's a good quarterback. I don't think he's great. There's a lot of quarterbacks that are out there. You look at the money that they're getting, and you're like, wow, how is this even, you know, possible that these quarterbacks are getting this kind of money? And Dak Prescott's one of those guys that I don't see it. I mean, I know teams are going to value the quarterback, and I just think it's an overpay. I think it's an overpay, you know, and what do you do? They're going to get it done. They're going to do it. You know, I think guys like Big Ben, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, you know, those are the guys, the Russ Wilsons, those are the guys, even though they're older, those are the guys that maybe should get the $30 to $40 million a year. I don't think these young guys have done anything to merit that.
Which sport has the most overpaid athletes? Actually, I don't want to go in terms of volume. I just wanted to, which sport overpays its athletes more? Who's more overpaid? Basketball, baseball, football of the three?
Super question. I was just
thinking about it, and it's like, man, we got some bad contracts in a lot of locations.
Right.
I don't want to talk volume. I don't want to talk about the sport with the most overpaid, just which sport overpays the most. The one where the contracts are like, oh my God, this is, because it used to be baseball. That was the thought.
Yes.
And now baseball seems very temperate compared to some of what we're seeing in the NBA.
Well, the last few off seasons, we haven't seen these mega deals, and you've seen all-star caliber players having to wait until right up into the deadline. JD Martinez a couple years ago, and of course, Keuchel and was it Kimbrel, the other guy this offseason?
Yes.
Who were waiting for contracts, and they probably didn't get the money that they thought was coming to them. And we look at Madison Bumgarner, and he's probably not going to get the same contract that we thought he would have gotten 3 or 4 years ago because the money hasn't dried up, but I think it's shrinking a little bit. To answer your question, I think it's basketball. When you look at, and you ran down the numbers the other day of how many players make at least $20 million a season. And
I think it's like 46 guys make $27 million or more per year this upcoming season.
And when you think about it,
46 guys.
For me,
and it's guaranteed.
If you're going to pay, let's look at Kirk Cousins, for example. He makes almost, what, $30 million a year? It is $30 million a year.
Total deals like 88.5. Call it 30 a year because it's only
guaranteed.
3 years.
So he's getting basically $2 million a game. But for that $2 million a game, there's a chance that an Alex Smith-level injury could happen in his life. Could be at risk. If you're playing a basketball game and you're making $30 million a year, you're making about $500,000 a game or maybe $400,000 a game, but most likely, you know, your life is not going to be changed irreparably. So for me, it still is basketball players who are more, there's more overpaid basketball players than the other sports.
What are you thinking? Do you agree with Dibs?
I do.
And church pew seat draws.
You don't always have to make it about the drawers. We can just, you know.
Yeah, we can let
right,
that
but pass. The casket slap can go all the way to the urination and the farting and the punching and all that.
That was an unfortunate funeral for you. You never know what the funeral will bring. You know, you don't always have security at your funeral. You never know who might get in.
I misspoke on how you calculate air conditioners and what they produce for those just joining us.
Classic. That was great. It's interesting because Dibs broke it down interesting, talking about how if you talk about football, they get paid more per game than basketball. Basketball guys, you know, like Dibs said, it comes out about $500 a game. Football, $2 million a game. But, yeah, the risk is football is far more. But, yeah, I would say basketball. But I would think that they would be like, well, no, these football players are getting this, but the injuries, the things that go with it, not guaranteed. Very few contracts are guaranteed. So I still think it's bad.
And often you don't find load management in football. It might be a case where you've already clinched in week 17. We're going to go ahead and give you the week off, and you can go ahead and get paid for not doing anything. But in basketball,
right.
And we went through the schedule last segment, 11 back-to-backs. And I can tell you right now, of those 11 back-to-backs, how many will Steph Curry sit out? Klay Thompson, when he comes back, and he's, you know, he's not going to play a back-to-back.
Yeah, there's no load management in the NFL.
No, there's not. I mean, there is kind of in baseball, but it's 162 games. And if you're Bryce Harper, for example, and you stay healthy, you're going to play in 150 games. You're going to get 600 at-bats. So not a lot of hiding in baseball.
Shannon's in Palo Alto, a.k.a. Santa Clara's hat. She wants to weigh in. Shannon, welcome to the show.
Bad.
What's going on?
Good morning, boys. How you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. How are you today?
Good. I was just wanting to jump in on that. I definitely have to say don't agree with Dips regarding the baseball. I respect that, of course, but I just feel that obviously football would be something I would say they're not overpaid with, just because of course, you know, the head injury thing, and just as much as they work and how much they put, you know, a toll on their body. Basketball, same thing, but not quite as rough. Baseball, I just find it to be kind of ludicrous. Baseball fan, but I don't follow it. But I find it to be ludicrous, some of the deals that have been coming down. And I definitely, I wouldn't agree that basketball players are overplayed. I think it's gotten kind of, you know, steep in the last couple of years. But of course, being a Warrior fan and just backing those guys, I think that I agree with the deals that Dre and everybody just signed. And Steph being loyal to the team is a good thing too. And I don't think that they're overpaid.
All right, appreciate the phone call.
And I also wanted to shout out my son. He's the biggest Raider fan and Warrior fan. It was his birthday, August 10th.
What's his name?
Marcus.
Marcus, happy birthday, Marcus.
Yes. Oh, thank you, sweetie. I really appreciate you letting me on. I usually call in and get in on the Raiders, so I'll call in another day when you guys are talking some AB and talking some hard knocks. It's, like, amazing. So, yeah, I'll call in another time and talk about that. But I just want to say good morning and get in on the whole question that you're talking about.
Thank you for the phone call. And hit us up tomorrow. We'll be recapping hard knocks. Hopefully there's some frostbitten feet that make an appearance, perhaps a helmet that doesn't make an appearance.
Yeah. Helmet
Next
gate.
Episode's tonight, so we'll be talking about it tomorrow. She called me sweetie there. Notice she just referenced one of us as that, not you or anyone in the back. So, Sweetie, Low and Dibs. That's the new name of the show, Sweetie, Low and Dibs, here on 95.7 The Game.
Better get a new theme song.
Yeah. That, and also, please start referring to me as Sweetie moving forward.
Okay, Sweetie.
Pump up the volume.
Thanks.
It's time for Sweetie.
Nice, Jim. Thank you.
John Morosi's coming up in about a minute, and we're taking calls on the Bay Bridge series all day. 888-957-9570 if you want to weigh in with predictions. Ray's in Napa, also known as... Marin County's hat.
I think it's Vallejo's earring, Joe.
Vallejo's earring as we continue this bit all day. Ray, thanks for your patience on hold. What do you think about this year's version of the Bay Bridge series?
Let's go, Oakland. When are we going to spank y'all? 9-0, 13-1. Doesn't matter, dude. Let's go, Oakland. And I dust myself off like I just sold dirt.
Great. Nice. Uptick.
Strong uptick right there.
Go ahead and rack him. Rack that
Very
guy.
Very nicely done.
Great
what does
call.
It mean when you say that, by the way? I've never
Jim Rome.
That.
It's a classic Jim
it's
Rome-ism.
A Rome comment.
Yeah, when you have a caller who calls in and he's great, the caller gets racked, and he could be the caller of the day. And at the end of the show, he'll play the caller of the day. It's like a 30-year-old reference.
Rack him. Okay, I get it now.
Rack that guy. Great. Phenomenal. He's racked.
I'm intense. That's how I do things. I'm
it's
intense.
Great.
Yes, yes.
He is one of the godfathers of the whole business, so.
I'm surprised none of the Jive fans didn't hit the line. Interesting.
Maybe they're not worried.
They're giving it up
Maybe
already.
They're sitting back and no. It's like, it's the A's. We just got up for the Fightins. We're going to get up for the Cubs here in a little bit. Maybe they don't get up for the A series. Do Giants fans not get up for the A series? 888-957-9570. Do A's fans get up for the Giants series? I think we clearly have proven that. Through the first couple phone calls of the day.
Just check the A's attendance.
And also
attendance.
Shannon, who called me sweetie, which is big.
That is huge. Huge for you. The A's attendance will double, if not triple, when the Giants come to town. So, of course, the A's are looking forward to the return visits. Mount Davis will be open. Going to be massive crowds out there in the town.
Shout out to all A's employees who have been hitting me up asking if they could use my parking at my apartment complex for the two games that will be taking place at Oracle. you will go unnamed, but, you know, we're going to expense that if you think I'm just going to go ahead and let you in my building for free. I'm the one that has to pay that penalty to the apartment building if they find out I'm doing committing such crimes.
Parking's very expensive, Joe.
You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ, FM and HD1, San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Good morning and welcome to the 7 o'clock hour of Joe Lowe and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Terrell Owens, the Hall of Famer, at 8:30. He's with us at 8:30 every Tuesday through the Super Bowl. Dante Whitner at 9:30. Right now, we go to the dial pad guest line to welcome in John Morosi, MLB insider for both Fox Sports and the MLB Network, with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. John, we appreciate your time as always. Let's start here. Of the regional rivalries that exist, Oakland versus San Francisco, when you talk about St. Louis and Kansas City, New York versus New York, all the options that are out there, which do you power rank at the top? And feel free to not have to pander to the Bay Area. If you like New York, feel free.
Give it some thought here. I love a lot of these interleague rivalries. I think they're so unique. I think my favorite of all probably is Cubs White Sox, just because being a Midwesterner, that's probably the one that's closest to me geographically, and also the one I probably follow the most closely over the years in terms of the interleague ones. But I do think it's so unique with the Giants and A's together in the Bay Area. Of course, so you think back, I guess now, goodness, 30 years ago to the World Series, and I think it's a really unique rivalry, a lot of history, and I think too the way the A's have been able to sustain, despite the vast difference in payroll and revenues and everything else, I think is really impressive. And I think this is not really a surprise now when the A's begin one of these series in a stronger position than the Giants. I think it's really impressive what they've done. And look at them now with work from Fires and Bassett. Here they are with a chance to make the playoffs yet again. So very impressed by the A's. And I would say I'd put that second after Cubs, White Sox, and then probably Yankees, Mets to round out the top three. And I would note this in general, big picture, quick point on this. I do think it's possible, not imminently, but by this time in the next decade, let's say 10 years from now, 8 years from now, we could see a scenario where if MLB gets to 32 teams, where the Giants and A's are in the same division, and you see a universal 32-team major league, quote unquote, with the DH standardized and radical realignment of the divisions, where this would be a recurring theme during the course of the season where the Giants and A's play a lot.
And John, when you think about this in terms of expansion, would we be looking at Montreal and perhaps a second Canadian city? Is there another spot that you have in mind? And what about the possible timetable for this such expansion?
Well, it's a great question, and I think that here's how I look at it. Number one, the commissioner has been on record as saying this, and I think it's absolutely true. They can't do anything until they know what's going on with Tampa and Oakland from a standpoint of the ballparks. Now, fortunately for the A's, and obviously as you guys know better than me, there's been, I think, a little more tangible progress with the A's than there has been for the Rays with the new ballpark, so that's good. And I think that MLB needs to just let that play out. Of course, they've got to renegotiate the labor agreement following 2021. So there are a few different data points that have to come in. It's going to have to be ballparks, either positive or negative, ultimately at some point with Tampa and Oakland, and then the new labor agreement. The union, one assumes, would be very supportive of the notion of adding 50 new jobs or 52 if it's a 26-man roster. So that's a really positive thing where I think the game can grow. You mentioned Montreal. I think certainly a strong candidate there. Vancouver, I think, is a good candidate. Nashville, there's been some interest. Charlotte. Portland, of course, on the West Coast has been a lot of talk there. Russell Wilson and his group, whether it's a relocation or an expansion team there. I could see Vegas, Austin, Texas, and certainly there's been talk in the past about Mexico. So there's enough interest. I believe there's a critical mass of cities and markets that could sustainably have a team that I believe that 32 teams in MLB is very possible in 8 to 10 years. I don't know that I'll say it's a certainty, but I think I put the odds of having a 32-team major league by 2029 at probably 60-40 in favor.
Love it. John Morosi, MLB Insider with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. I want to go back to another point there. The Giants and the A's in the same division. How much of this realignment walk me through that. What would that look like for the rest of the division? You can't possibly break up Giants-Dodgers, right?
Well, that's a very fair point, and that's where it gets a little bit tricky. And it depends on where the expansion comes. On the West Coast, certainly you've got a lot of options. You could, of course, split up. You could keep them, the two of them separate. You could, depending on if there's a team in Portland, you could go Seattle, Portland, Oakland, Colorado, maybe, if you want to do it that way. But the key thing is it's going to be eight divisions of four teams to get to 32. And when you do it that way, it's a really tight geographic collection of cities, which, to your point, if you go with a Dodgers, Padres, Angels, Giants, maybe you could do it that way, and then you would have the two Bay Area teams in different divisions. Or if you had it all together, you may well have Giants, A's, Mariners, and the Portland team, with then Colorado looped in with the Padres and the Dodgers and Angels. That may be how you do it. But then what do you do with the D-backs? So there's an interesting little combination of circumstances there. But I think the teams for which you would have the biggest impact are those that are in the central time zone but constantly playing west. And by that I mean you look at in-division games for the Astros and Rangers, a lot of them start at 9 o'clock in their local time zone, which is, as a general rule, it's not too late, but it's you'd prefer that it be a 7 o'clock game as often as possible for the purpose of TV. So one of the great benefits of doing it this way is that you tighten up your divisions and you play a vast majority of your games in your home time zone. So maybe that division for the Central would become Rangers, Astros, Kansas City, and St. Louis, or Rangers, Astros, KC, and the Nashville team. That way you could keep St. Louis with the Cubs and the Brewers. And there's a lot of different ways to make it work, but I think it'll make a massive travel impact for those clubs, and frankly for Seattle too, and even for the A's. The A's spend a lot of time in the air because the AL West is so geographically diffuse that I think that when you tighten things up, it makes the quality of life a lot better, especially for the Mariners. They travel the most miles of any team in baseball every single year. But I think for the A's as well, and even for the teams that are back more towards Texas and in the central part of the country. So I think it's a win for, I think, everybody. Certainly there are probably those that may have some issues with it, but I think in general a lot to look forward to, and I do think it would help teams probably have stronger TV ratings, stronger attendance, because those geographic rivalries will be a little bit tighter.
No question. I know Nashville's a great place for a team. They know how to welcome some teams.
They do.
Tonight's game, when you look at Brett Anderson, you look at Madison Bumgarner is going to pitch here for the Giants. Pros and cons, go through this matchup and just, I know A seems like to have the hotter bats. How do you see this matchup, especially with the pitching tonight?
Well, I think it really, to me, it's a very fitting matchup. Although when you think about the fact that you've got Bumgarner on the mound, and certainly the month of August hasn't gone quite the way the Giants expected when they kept Bumgarner. They thought maybe they would be in a little bit of a stronger position to make a run at the wild card here based on the decision they made to keep Mad Bum as a deadline. But I think Anderson, to me, it's remarkable to look at his journey and where he is at. Of course, he made his MLB debut 10 years ago, and now being back with Oakland for the third time, I believe, is pretty remarkable. And I think his consistency has been getting better, I think, as time has gone on. His ERA is now under 4. He's already got 10 wins this season. He's quietly having one of the best years of his entire career. In fact, it's probably the best year that he's had overall since that first season with the Dodgers in 2015. I mean, he's been extremely consistent. I've been very impressed with his work overall. I think that the strikeout totals for him are never going to be especially high, but he's been able to, because of the movement on his fastball, get weak contact. And he is someone who I think you consider where the development of Semien has been. I think Marcus Semien gets a lot of credit, frankly, for the way that Anderson has pitched, because you consider the defense and the reliance there on the defensive play that Anderson has, because the ball is in play a lot when he's on the mound. Semien's growth as a shortstop, I think, just cannot be talked about enough. He really has done an extraordinary job. The work that he's put in, incredibly impressive. All-star caliber player, certainly, now is Marcus Semien. And I think he's had a big role in Anderson's growth. I think the outfield defense has been huge as well. So I look at it, guys, and consider this rotation Anderson and in the way that, that Bassett has pitched of late and Fires, they have found a way to really assemble a group of starters that has pitched, I think, much better than anticipated and very solidly relative to the rest of the league. You look at how much money the Red Sox are spending on their rotation, and the A's fans have to be thrilled with their production, certainly per dollar spent on the rotation this year. And while Anderson doesn't have the same notoriety as Mad Bum, I think the overall pitching this year, especially in that division, has been in many ways almost as good as what we've seen from Madison Bumgarner.
John, we know you have to get out here in a couple seconds, so real quickly, do you think Farhan Zaidi has a couple names at the top of his list to replace Bruce Bochy for the managerial position that's about to open up?
I do. And I'll mention one. I think the most prominent one that I would mention is Raul Ibanez. I think Raul, and I'll take a minute, a quick second to explain Raul. I mean, I think to me, he worked with Farhan in L.A., and Raul is one of the most respected players I have ever come across in my years covering baseball. And he's been an executive now with the Dodgers for a number of years, getting to understand the player development apparatus and scouting, and he understands the big picture. I think he's done a very good job. He's a very studious guy. So he's gone to the Dodgers. He's learned the way that they run things. And, of course, he played for a long time with the Mariners and finished up his career with the Royals. So well respected. And I believe that connection there to Farhan and just the way that he handles people, handles teammates, the media, he's one of the more impressive people I've come across in baseball. So I'd say Ibanez, I am certain, is going to get interviewed. Also, Josh Bard, who's now on the coaching staff, the bench coach of the New York Yankees, he was a Dodger coach as well. I think I don't want to oversimplify things by saying, well, it's important for this guy to have a Dodger connection to Farhan, but it certainly helps. And I think that familiarity allows both Josh Bard and Raul to kind of skip past a lot of the more introductory parts of the conversation and kind of go to the next steps and really get into the details. And I think that comfort level will be there for Farhan, and I think for some reason, I sense that Raul has got a really good shot at this job. He's bilingual, bicultural. He relates just so well, and I think that the Giants fans would really enjoy having him as the manager. I think he's someone that I think just relates so well and knows the game on such a deep level. He's got, I know, a big family life. He's a big family guy. I think for him to move his family west, it would have to be for the right job, but certainly to manage the Giants, I would say, is a very, very special opportunity in the game of baseball.
Great stuff. We know we kept you late. John Morosi, MLB Insider, Fox Sports, and the MLB Network with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. We always appreciate it, John. Thank you very much.
You guys are the best. Thanks for everything. Enjoy the Bay Bridge series, my friends. I know it's a special week in San Francisco and in Oakland, and have a great week. I'll be watching carefully from back here in the Midwest.
No doubt. Thank you, John.
Thanks so much.
That was incredible. I don't even know where to begin. We got a couple candidates. Trivia question. Raul Ibanez went to one All-Star game. Who was he a member of when he went to that game?
It had to be the Phillies.
It was definitely the Phillies.
Yeah, he had a nice little career.
And Morosi, very disrespectful by mentioning the royal portion of Ibanez's career and also the Seattle portion, while just casually and perhaps haphazardly leaving out the Philadelphia portion of his career. So we'll ask him to button up next time he comes on while he gives us just content for days. I don't even know where to begin. Josh Bard and Raul Ibanez. All right, get to know those names, Giant fans, because that could be the Bochy replacement. Also, learn Spanish, I'm guessing, if you want to be the replacement. The idea of being multicultural, bilingual, important in baseball. Important with a lot of the prospects coming from different countries, especially when they come over and they're young. So young, some of the guys. Ramos came over 17, 18 when they signed him. And then they had the other guy that they traded away. I'm forgetting. He was from the Bahamas, I want to say.
I love the...
For some reason, I'm forgetting the name.
We went over there, Joe, and I love the Japanese that we had. Remember, he had the translator. I enjoyed the conversation, and he had the guy...
Nori Aoki.
Yeah, Aoki. You know?
One of the great stories. One of the great moments when we were down there covering a game. After the game, we're in the locker room. You can go talk to anyone in the clubhouse you want. Lowe is talking to the one guy who doesn't speak English. So he's talking to Aoki. Aoki's talking to the translator. They're going back and forth. It was incredible. I've never seen anything like it in my life.
Yeah, so speak a little bit of everything. Be bilingual like that. You can just, the sky's the limit in the players you can reach. So we'll see how it works out, though.
There was a study the other day that said if children are multilingual between three languages, they have the best chance for success in life. Can you guess what the three languages are? I will give you six choices to get three.
Of course, it's Spanish.
No.
Really?
No. This is a study that said these three languages will set you up for the best success.
Chinese, without a doubt.
Well, it would be Cantonese or Mandarin. So
gotta locate.
Those are the two languages. We'll go with Mandarin, Joe.
You got one. Yeah, go ahead and give yourself a ding.
Thank you.
Now, you're off on Spanish. I would have thought the same thing because it's such a popular language, but that was not on there. Mandarin was on there.
Yes.
Two others.
It's Italian or German because it's more versatile. I'll say Italian, Joe, because Italian is a versatile language. You can learn French and German by learning Italian.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's incorrect, but interesting.
It's not that interesting. Portuguese would be another one that I would lean toward because Portuguese, very versatile language. We'll go with... We'll go with Portuguese, Joe.
Incorrect.
Really? I'm surprised you didn't go with the, I'm surprised you wouldn't go with the Jewish language because of the fact that so many
Hebrew?
Business. Yeah.
Interesting. Is one of the guesses going to be Hebrew?
I wouldn't go with Hebrew. I would look for, you know, maybe a language that has a little bit more scope with the billions.
Yeah.
Perhaps Farsi or
Final answers are French and German. French and German to go with Mandarin. French and German to go with Mandarin. I did appreciate the guesses of Hebrew.
Italian
and
was close.
Portuguese.
Yeah, it's
Portuguese.
Underrated. You go to South America, a lot
Not
of Portuguese
underrated.
Being spoken.
The thing about Portugal is you always forget about it. There's no more forgotten about European country than Portugal. You start naming European countries, France, Spain, England, Italy mentioned right off the top. And then you start thinking, Germany, Switzerland.
Brazil.
Start worrying.
What do they speak in Brazil? Portuguese.
I'm talking about Europe. I'm not talking about South America, which is the other side of the planet entirely.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Europe right now. Are you of the belief that Brazil is located within Europe?
No, it's close, though. Much like Georgia is close to the Carolinas, as we've discussed previously on this very program, Joe.
All right, so get to know the names Raul Ibanez and Josh Bard, if you haven't done so already, as potential replacements for Bruce Bochy down the line. What about that nugget he drops on us? We just ask him about, hey, you know, what do you think about the regional rivalries? Yeah. Which one's your favorite? Then he goes ahead and lays out a world in the next 10 years where he gives it a 60% chance that there's going to be two expansion teams. Obviously, Montreal is one that a lot of people have an eye on. Portland is one that keeps coming up. Vegas, which I don't think a baseball team works in Vegas.
Nashville.
I think everything but baseball works in Vegas. Nashville, Mexico's mentioned.
He said Austin.
Austin. So you've got this, he thinks 60% chance within 10 years you're to 32 teams. Then he's talking about this massive realignment.
Right.
Universal DH, which slid through the cracks as well.
Right.
Universal DH, 8 divisions, 4 teams each.
Right.
Giants, A's in the same division. Could you see that? Let me scratch that. Would you want that?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yes, and baseball is moving away from traditionalism in many, many ways. We've got such things as a pitch clock now where we never would have had a pitch clock before. All kinds of different rules they're trying to throw out there to make baseball more popular. And nothing will help the popularity more than having regional rivals that are going to play each other on a regular basis. So it's not only Giants-Dodgers. It'd be Giants-Dodgers. It would be Giants-A's. It would be Giants-Angels, potentially. If you didn't add any West Coast teams, if it's not Portland, let's say it's Montreal and Nashville, for lack of a better city to choose.
They wouldn't do that. You'd have a West and an East. So I would say if you want to do a hypothetical, do Portland and Montreal or do Nashville and Portland. Don't do Portland or don't do Montreal and Nashville because those are both East.
But for the sake of the argument, and I think you're looking right now at the 8 teams out here being broken into 4 divisions. You've got Arizona and Colorado. You've got L.A. and Anaheim, you've got San Francisco and Oakland, and you've got Seattle
Padres.
And San Diego. Yeah, those are your 8 teams that you would try and divide into 2 4-team divisions.
Are those the 8 that are in the Pacific time zone? Well, I know Arizona might
Colorado
shift.
Colorado is in the mountain.
They're mountain.
Right. So, I think there's 6 in the Pacific, and then there's Arizona and Colorado.
Right. Well,
Arizona spends half the year in the Pacific.
Right.
Right.
But how many baseball teams... As of now, right now, the 30 MLB teams, how many are in the Pacific time zone?
There's six. San Diego, Seattle.
Okay.
Anaheim, LA.
All right.
Oakland, San Francisco.
Okay.
Those are your 6.
And then Arizona for part of the year.
And then,
I know I make that complicated, but.
No, they make it complicated.
You know what? You're right.
They make it complicated. And then Colorado spends 6 months of the year in the same time zone as Arizona, 6 months by themselves in the mountain. Because when Arizona's not in the Pacific, they're in the mountain. just like Colorado.
How many times are you playing your divisional opponents a year? Like 19, right?
Yep.
Somewhere right now. Is
18
it
exact, or 19.
18 or 19 for all your... So 18 or 19 games between the A's and the Giants per year, and you think that would be a good thing?
I do, especially as it pertains yes. to the Oakland A's. And, you know, it's going to help the Giants to an extent, but also it helps Oakland, and you create these real ongoing rivalries. Instead of just a two-game set and then see you in a week right. for the Bay Bridge Trophy, you would actually be playing for something. Imagine a September game... A three-game series where it's Giants and A's for the division title. That would be incredible.
He makes a great point that I never really considered. The idea that a team like Houston, if you're an Astros fan and you love watching all the games, how many games they have to play in the Pacific time zone where the start time for you is going to be 9 p.m.? Like, you're not going to stay up for that.
That's about 30 to 35 of your road games because you've got 9 at Oakland, you've got 9 at Anaheim, and you've got 9 at Seattle. That's 27 of your 81 road games that are all going to be on at 9 o'clock at night for
you. And then if you cross over with the NL West and you have a couple road games with San Diego, with San Francisco, damn, that's I like that. I started toying with possible divisional alignments. I only got to the fourth division.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.